Good afternoon. The meeting of the House Judiciary Committee, which convened yesterday at 5, is coming back to order today. It is now 1:07 p.m. on Wednesday, March 23rd, in the State Capitol, Room 120, otherwise known as the Grunberg Room. We have members present. We have Representative Millett, Representative Lynn, Representative Klayman, Vice Chair Keller, and myself, Chair Ledoux. Everybody, please silence your cell phones. We do have a quorum today. Thank you, Christy Blair, our Judiciary Secretary, and Christy Perrin from the Juno LIO for teleconferencing support. We're going to continue hearing testimony, public testimony, on House Bill 205. Before we begin, I want to say thank you to all who testified yesterday and for the patience for those of you who did not get a chance to testify yesterday and have come back today. We kind of didn't time it right yesterday. We thought we'd be able to wrap up at 7 o'clock with all of our public testimony heard. I think we wrapped up closer to 8 with only about half of our public testimony heard. Friday's judiciary is canceled. Amendments are now due Friday, April 1st at 1 p.m. And public testimony is limited to 3 minutes. And I'm now going to reopen public testimony. The first person I'm going to call is Al, how do I pronounce your last name?
Tamani.
Thank you, Representative Millett. And did I announce who was present today?
Yes
I did. Good. Thank you. So, Al, you want to identify yourself for the record, and you can proceed. Public testimony is going to be limited to 3 minutes per speaker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Al Tamani, Sr. I'm the leadership chair of the National Federation of Independent Business here in Alaska, and I want to testify on parts of this bill, particularly on the increase from $500 to $2,000. That's a 267% increase. It affects all types of entities, individual businesses, local and state governments, etc., etc. If, in fact, there's going to be any increase at all, I guess what I would ask is that have we gotten any statistical information from the Anchorage Police Department? I know they put out an annual report which shows the types of crimes that are committed. You may want to take a look at that information. I understand it's on the internet, and that I guess if we're going to increase the allowance up to $2,000 from a fee perspective, that's pretty good, because I can actually almost steal three times as much and pay the same amount of fine. And I don't think that's good public policy. If, in fact, that happens, then I think you need to increase the fines by 267% and increase that amount at 3% annually also. And because of the increase in fines, that could be one-third could go to the state, one-third to go to the citation entity, and one-third to compensate the victims for their losses. I just, I take a look at this and I say, you know, this is a huge jump, and we have no statistics that have really been presented here locally to indicate there what the numbers are from the last increase up to $500. Well, I think that's kind of what our position is, and that we would certainly recommend that if you were going to increase any value to the allowance beyond what it currently is, that you probably try and have somebody gather some stats from the Anchorage Police Department. Thank you, Madam Chair. to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Al. I believe Representative Millett may have a question.
Hi, Al. Thanks for being on. Al is also one of my constituents. This bill is bringing out all my constituents to testify. I really want to thank you for your testimony, and I did preface this portion of the bill when we went through the sectional about this is a policy call that this committee would have to make on the increase of theft, and just know that I am keeping your remarks in my brain while we're thinking about this and going through that, and you had some really good testimony, and I had Denny DeWitt come by my office too and had an at-length conversation about this, so just know that because it's written, it's not set in stone. It's a policy call that this committee will make, and we'll definitely keep you and the other folks that have questions and have skepticism about raising the threshold of theft and what the impacts it will have to private sector and businesses in the forefront as we go through this.
Thank you, Representative Millett. Representative Lynn?
Yes, I'm anticipating an amendment, which we'll talk about next week, I suppose, to keep it at 750.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. Representative Keller?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Al, did I hear you say that if we do raise the threshold, we ought to consider balancing the fine level? I'm pretty sure that's what you said, and I just wanted to explore that further and just want to confirm that that's what you were saying.
Yes, that is. If there's going to be an increase, say, to 2,000, that's a 267% increase. The fines should then be equally raised by 267%, and to also increase it 3% also if, in fact, that's part of the threshold.
Thanks.
Any further questions for Al? Yeah, Representative Clayman.
Thank you, Al. I appreciate your what is your current understanding, if you know, of the maximum fines for misdemeanors?
At this point, I'm not sure what the maximum is. I haven't had the time to go through the huge bill. Maybe you could help me out on that.
Sure. Well, I was curious because you propose a very interesting idea, and I'm just taking a quick look at a Class A misdemeanor, and I pulled up AS 1255035, which actually there's a couple of different sections, but I'm pretty sure I'm reading it correctly, that the maximum fine for a Class A misdemeanor is $10,000. And so would your sense be is if we raise the fine level by, I'll use rough numbers, if we raise the potential fine from $10,000 to $20,000, would that make you comfortable with raising the threshold amount for felonies?
How much?
Well, the proposal is to raise the felony level to $2,000 so that it's a misdemeanor if the theft is less than $2,000. And my query is if we raise the fine level for misdemeanors from $10,000 to $20,000 so the judge would have the authority to basically fine somebody at 10 times the amount they were potentially stealing, would that make you comfortable with that increase in the threat? Felony theft threshold. This is a tongue twister for me.
Only if that were raised probably to, say, 1,000 to 1,500. I think 1,000 to 1,500 would be something would be acceptable as long as we have the provision is a third of the increase would go to the courts, one third to the citation agency, and one third to the victim.
You mean the fine?
Yes.
Okay. But we're talking about going from $10,000 to $20,000, which is a lot more than $500 or $1,500.
How about the percentage isn't equal?
Well, okay, but let's say we make the percentage equal. If the equal percentage would be to raise the fine level, the maximum fine, to $25,000 so that was a proportional increase in the fine, would that make you comfortable with the felony theft threshold?
It would be something to consider, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? Representative Keller.
I'll ask this. We have two attorneys here. enlighten me. Is there a possibility of building in a section of law particular to this that somehow specifies restitution as mitigating the fine level, so that the so the damages could get back to the business owner more in a little different way than we would in other areas? Seems like common sense to me, but I always get a little puzzled when that doesn't quite fit into our legal system. But built-in restitution option. Is that a possibility here?
Representative Keller, maybe we can save that after public testimony, but I actually think it might be a very good idea.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I just wanted to put it on the record. I didn't expect a big discussion. Thank you. Yeah.
And now, just through I won't respond in detail, but restitution is already part and fairly routine, but I would want to defer to either one of the from the Department of Law or from the public defender to talk a little bit about how restitution is incorporated, and I don't want to offer.
Maybe we can do that in a time other than public testimony.
Perfect.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Al. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee.
So the next person that I've got listed is Butch Moore. And Butch, you want to identify yourself for the record and tell us who you're representing?
Yes, hello, House Judiciary Committee. My name is Butch Moore, and I am the father of Bree Moore. House Bill 44, sponsored by Sharice Millett. Thank you for passing that to keep our kids safe. I have a couple comments. I have submitted to your committee an email March 22nd at 3:59 p.m. Hopefully you have a copy of that. I have several items, seven different items on there that could be amendments that I would appreciate you considering. Cindy and I have spent a lot of time with Ann Seymour at the Pew Charitable Trust and the three different components that they've recommended, which we agree with. One is taking the lesser offenders and giving them either a lesser sentence time, basically not creating criminals out of people that have just made a mistake. The second portion was reinvestment to help reintegrate people back into the community and prevent and educate to prevent crime. And the third one was to become harsher on the most violent offenders. And this, the purpose of this bill, I believe, is to save money and also to accomplish those three different items. One of the, my item number two, which Senator Coghill has added several places in his Senate Bill 91, is to add that these different changes do not apply to anyone convicted of an unclassified felony, a sexual felony, or a crime involving domestic violence. And so that would then exclude the easier sentencing for these people. Another item that I have is number six, and I think it's very important, and I can use it to apply directly to our situation, is that when someone is by court order put on parole or probation and they have an alcohol restriction, which means they cannot consume alcohol, their license should be surrendered. We should, in other words, when they check out of jail or when they're bailed, they should not be have their license given back to them. They should be given a state ID or a driver's license with the red bars on it that say alcohol prohibited. In our particular case, Josh Almeida walked into a liquor store and bought a bottle of alcohol, got drunk, and killed our daughter. He was on probation, and he was on alcohol restriction, but they had not taken his license away. So that was number six on my list. And we have Cindy scheduled to speak next, and if she'll let me speak for her, she's asked me if I would speak for her because she's not feeling like talking today, if that's acceptable.
Certainly.
I think the biggest thing that we need to address, and the purpose for this bill, is to save money and to help our society in general, not to create criminals where we have none. And so I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but our prison population has doubled in the last 10 years. The majority of that is pretrial. People awaiting trial and awaiting sentencing. And Josh Almeida, who killed our daughter, is a perfect example. If it was not for our persistence and the pressure that we've applied to the prosecutor's office and to the defense attorney, we wouldn't be as far along in the process as we are now. We're coming up on 2 years. Josh Almeida still has not been sentenced. So when we look at the problem that we have and the overcrowding that we have in our prisons, let's look at really where the problem is. And the problem is 93% of that increase are people awaiting trial or awaiting sentencing, defendants. And the strategy, just like the defense attorney for Josh Almeida, Andrew Lambert, has another murder trial down in Kenai, and his only strategy, the only way that these defense attorneys can win these cases are to put the cases off as long as possible, where the witnesses, the detectives, the prosecutors, the judges will quit, die, retire, get fired, move, or forget. And so it is a benefit to the defense attorney and the defendant to put it off as long as possible. And what my suggestion is and what I would submit to you is the overcrowding in the prisons that we have are people awaiting trial. And so if we were to say that if, and we have a statute that says we as a victim and the defendant have a right to a speedy disposition, which is 120 days. So in the case of Josh Almeida, he did not plead guilty until over a year after the offense. So if he was only to be given 120 days worth of jail time credit towards his final sentence, he would have a motivation to get out of jail. In other words, if he's in jail for 3 years and he only gets credit for 120 days, then all these defendants would be pressuring and pushing their attorneys to get them into trial immediately. That's where the overcrowding is, and that's what's happened in our case with Josh Almeida and many other defendants. And the other thing I would submit with that is if they're in jail for 3 years or 2 years, and I talked to the district attorney's office today, and they have some cases that have gone 5 and 6 years where the state is paying to house defendants, and after 120 days, the defendant's screaming at their attorney saying, I'm not getting any credit for this time. So if I'm sentenced to 10 years and I've been in jail for 5, I effectively only get 120 days worth of credit. This is where all the pressure and all the overcrowding is. And I think that there's a way that we can pass a law, we can eliminate the majority of the changes in House Bill 205 and Senate Bill 91 and really address what the problem is. It'll be better for victims because they'll get a speedier disposition. The people you're going to get the objections from are going to be the defense attorneys because they will not be able to drag these times out where they're coming up with 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 years billing their clients and their clients' families the whole time. And in addition, maybe we should consider billing the defendants if they're found guilty for the additional time past 120 days if it's continued at their request or their attorney's request. So I appreciate the time. If you guys have any questions, I appreciate answering them. I was not able to address all the suggestions that I made in my email, but I think you'll find that they're good suggestions.
Butch, Cindy, thank you very much for your testimony. Thank you for your suggestions. I was a co-sponsor on the bill that you mentioned, and my condolences on your loss. Any questions for? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next person I have is Melanie Bonke, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Do you want to identify yourself for the record and tell us who you're affiliated with?
Yes, ma'am. This is Melanie Banky. I'm the president of COERC in the Bering Strait region. I'm also the co-chair of the Council for Advancement of Alaska Natives, which is a committee of the Alaska Federation of Natives. Our group is comprised of the presidents of the 12 regional nonprofit tribal consortia throughout the state, as well as five Alaska Native-serving statewide organizations. Thank you for allowing me to testify today on House Bill 205.
Thank you. You can proceed.
I'm calling in support of House Bill 205. We believe that it will help restore healthy communities, improve public safety, save the state money, and to expand treatment and services. A couple of weeks ago, we had staff from the Correctional Center here in Nome come to a joint health corporation and COERC board meeting, and the information that they shared with us really highlighted the need for some changes to the criminal justice system. The vast majority of the inmates at our correctional facility are Alaska Native. They're low income, and the vast majority of them are incarcerated because of alcohol-related crimes. They suffer from substance abuse and mental health issues. Also, just anecdotally, if you read our local crime blotter weekly, we have a newspaper, you'll note a high number of people in that crime blotter for probation violation. We had the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority come to our region a couple of months ago, and at that point of time, it was Commissioner Taylor still heading up corrections, and one thing that he said really struck me. He said that his department is basically the largest mental health and substance abuse facility in the state of Alaska, but without the resources for substance abuse and mental health treatment. So I'm calling in to support House Bill 205, and especially everywhere it aligns with the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission report that was issued in December of 2015. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions? Well, Melanie, thank you very much for making the time to testify. Thank you for your testimony. Next person I've got on the line is Donna Fisher. Donna, are you there? Apparently, Donna Fisher is not there. All right. Then let's go to Marna Sanford of the Tenena Chiefs Conference. And Marna, please identify yourself for the record and tell us who you represent.
Yes, thank you. This is Marna Sanford, and I'm calling in on behalf of the Tenena Chiefs Conference, which is located in Fairbanks, represents 42 tribes. Tenena Chiefs Conference is in support of House Bill 205, and you know, in listening to some of the concerns that have been mentioned already just today, I think one of the things that's important to remember when looking at legislation like this is that we are looking to you as our leaders to help us do the right thing here. I think as members of the community, we can often be afraid that these kinds of bills are just going to be handing the keys to the jail to people. But what everybody in Alaska feels to be, to see, and if they go to the Criminal Justice Commission's website, they can look at the studies, is that what we're doing hasn't worked, and I know you guys have heard this already, but until we all buy in together as Alaskans to allow these changes to take place, we won't have less victims. We will continue to have more and more and more victims if we continue operating the way that we have in the past. And so I would just encourage you guys to keep the version that you have now intact and not water it down. The way that it is written currently is going to make a lot of really positive changes, and I think once we let them get moving and see the effects of them, that all Alaskans are going to be better off. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Marna. Are there any questions? Well, then thank you very much again. I next have Caitlin Walsh.
It's Walsh, actually.
Walsh. Yeah, I think that's, I'm reading that incorrectly, or it may be spelt incorrectly. At any rate, could you identify yourself for the record and tell us who you're affiliated with?
My name's Caitlin, and I'm affiliated with the Community United for Safety and Protection, a group of queer and former sex workers who are most trafficked victims and allies.
Excuse me, hold on for just a second. It's really breaking up.
Oh, sorry, my phone is so bad, I'm sorry.
I can hear you a little bit better right now. You want to start from the beginning?
Okay. My name's Caitlin. And I'm with the Community United for Safety and Protection.
Excuse me. Our recording secretary tells me that I've got to tell you to sit back, that maybe you're speaking too closely to the phone.
I think this phone just has a weird microphone or something. I'm not sure.
Maybe if you spoke slower, the recording secretary isn't able to record you, and we're having problems understanding you.
Let me try to call back from another line.
That's better right there.
That's better right there. You still there?
Is it better now?
You probably should try calling back from another line. I'm going to take somebody else in the meantime, and we'll get back to you, okay? No? Okay. Next person is Vicki Wallner. Vicki, you want to identify yourself for the record and tell us who you represent?
My name is Vicki Wallner. I am with Stop Valley Thieves. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
I founded Stop Valley Thieves in 2013. What it is an online group that's basically like a neighborhood watch group. We have approximately 11,000 members. We're based in the Valley. And we encourage vigilance and not vigilante. And I want to emphasize that because I don't want people getting the wrong idea of what we do. I have listened to all the hearings. I've read all the commission reports. I've read a lot of their research. And I want to speak today on House Bill 205. And I'm here to speak on behalf of the silent majority. And that is the victims of property crime. The focus of much of this bill is on low-level nonviolent offenders. Because property crime is considered a nonviolent offense, little to no consideration is given to the impact of property crime on its victims. Yet that impact is not only financial, it's emotional, physical, spiritual. The ripple effect of property crime on neighborhoods, communities, people such as Midtown, Mount View, Meadow Lakes is very real. It erodes and tears the social fabric of communities. Now, property crime accounts for 81% of the crime in Alaska. 81% of the crime is property crime. But only 17% of the people that are incarcerated are there due to property crimes. HB 205 will lower the levels of incarceration even more. Victims of property crimes already feel helpless, as most of their crimes are never solved. They feel hopeless when they report a burglary or a car theft. You may or may not get a physical police response. You may only receive a phone call to take your information. No fingerprints are taken, no pictures are taken. Most people believe no one cares. The provisions in this bill lowering the threshold of Class C felony theft to $2,000 and lowering the penalty to probation and then making much of the property crime a Class A misdemeanor that's under $2,000 and lowering that penalty to 30 days is not only insulting to victims of property crime, it reinforces the belief that we are only numbers, dollar signs, and a cost to the corrections. We're not real people who have been harmed. Who among you even cares about these victims? Since when should the majority of offenders no longer be held accountable for their actions? I have listened, like I said, to every hearing. I've read the research. I hear things like getting the best bang for our buck, the criminologic effect of jail on offenders, diminishing returns, how we're going to use the savings instead to reinvest in programs for offenders. We're already spending millions on treatment. And how is that working out for us? Two out of three people fail. Yet research says we should spend more. People on the street who want treatment that have not committed a crime can't get into the limited beds available because we're clogging them up with court-ordered offenders. Why can't we hold offenders accountable by putting them in jail and giving them the carrot of incentive by linking their early release to in-house programs which are being underutilized? The RSAP program, Residential Substance Abuse Program, the LSAP program, Life Success Substance Abuse Treatment. Last year, only 601 prisoners completed LSAT, and only 152 completed RSAT. Worse yet, only 23 offenders last year got their GED. Another thing I hear is that our prisons are full. They talk about the 10-year increase in prison population, but I encourage you to look at the 5-year prison population. We increased our population in 5 years of incarcerated individuals by 124 people.
Vicki, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap this up. Public testimony, we've got a number of people on the line, so I'm limiting it to 3 minutes per person. Anything else? If you can wrap up in the next 30 seconds or so, and then you're welcome to submit written testimony.
Well, from 2013 to 2015, we've only increased our prison population by 3 people. So we're making headway in reducing it with SB 64, HB 50. You know, we're going to reduce it even more this year. And we can reduce it in this bill by enacting the parts that are barriers to reentry. That is a good part, and the DMV portion. I want to also lastly say that this bill is opposed by the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association, the Alaska Peace Officers Association, a number of small law enforcement agencies, and the Office of Victim Rights. Their concern is public safety. I trust their judgment. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vicki. Anybody have any questions for Vicki? Again, thank you very much for testifying.
Thank you.
Going to go now to the Matsu LIO, Marty Kincaid. Marty, can you please identify yourself for the record and tell us if you have any affiliations that you're testifying for?
Yes, thank you for this opportunity. My name is Marty Kincaid. I live in Palmer. And I want to just read, because it'll make it concise, what I wrote to my senators and representatives. Concerning Senate Bill 91, House Bill 205, and House Bill 276. I am so thankful for the above-referenced bills that are before the legislature regarding the current DUI laws. My concern is for the individuals who have previously lost their license for life. Do these bills provide any hope for them? Understandably, public safety is of the highest concern, but there should be a balance between corrective punishment and providing opportunities for men and women to be restored. Currently, individuals that have had 3 or more DUIs within a 10-year period are branded as a Class C felon and have lost their license for life with possible restoration after 10 years. What has happened to these men and women that have floundered within the system as treatment programs were unavailable at the time? The goal of any new legislation should allow past offenders the same opportunity as present or future violators to be healed and restored as productive members to their families and the community. And then I wrote this to Representative Tilton in response to the House Bill 93 that she mentioned, or the Frontiersman mentioned. And talking about the House bill is to find and keep gainful employment. And I said one critical area in finding and keeping gainful employment is the ability to drive. Losing one's license for life suffocates any possibility of attaining that employment. Along with checking off the box that the applicant has been convicted of a felony greatly inhibits the possibility of even a job interview. There needs to be measures in place to balance public safety with redeeming productive life for past, present, and future offenders. Treatment, restrictive license, ignition monitors, etc. are some possibilities. And Butch Moore had an excellent idea about marking the driver's license with red bars or something so they were not able to buy any alcohol. And the other thought I had on this was that when there is no harm to person or property, maybe there should be different levels of degrees of offense so that not all DUI offenders are thrown into losing license for life in a Class C felony when there's been no harm to person or property. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Marty. Any questions for Marty? All right, well, thank you for making yourself available to testify. Next, we're going to go to the Kenai LIO, and we've got Helen Kroom. Helen, please identify yourself for the record and tell us with whom you're affiliated.
Yes, my name is Helen Kroom, and I'm basically here representing myself, although I live in Sterling for 38 years, and we've had a tremendous amount of property theft. And I'm just here to say, number one, about the DUI, my mother was blind, and she raised three children taking a taxi to and from work, and she never had a single day that she missed because she did not have transportation. So I don't buy that. Also, Mr. Moore's suggestion of the 120 days, I think that is absolutely awesome. That is a great idea. $750 stolen property off of your property may not be much, but the social group that I associate with, I'm going to tell you something, that's money at our house. And to say that they've got to steal $2,000 worth of stuff from us before they're really held accountable is just absolutely unacceptable in my opinion. And this reinvestment, listen, all that is a program that y'all are going to cut somewhere down the road. The reinvestment has no weight whatsoever for me as far as I'm concerned. All that's going to do is you're going to increase your victims. You're going to decrease your prison population possibly, which I don't even think that's true. But even if you decreased your prison population, you raise your victim, okay, well, there's your money. It's going to go right back to paying victims, and that just means you're going to just simply be raising more and more victims. Law enforcement, listen, to arrest these people is a dicey deal for policemen. They put their life on the line whenever they pull a car over, and they go to arrest that person. Then that person goes to jail, and that judge's hands are tied by laws such as this, to where they can't even hold the perpetrator accountable. That all comes right back into y'all's lap. I think that judges want to act to protect the public, but if you're making laws such as this one, you're making it very difficult for the public to maintain their own property. You're making it difficult for policemen, which just exactly like this lady just said, the police associations are totally against this. Y'all ought to be listening to what they have to say. And I will tell you that I totally and 100% oppose this bill. I think you're going in the wrong direction. I'll tell you something. If you make it tougher instead of easier, you will reduce that prison population pretty doggone fast. It's a pretty comfortable place to be in some situations. I just want to say that I think that it's a very flawed law, and I think that if you're going to do rehabilitation, you're going to do reentry programs, they need to be exactly as that lady was saying, they need to be in-house, and the ones coming out need to be community-based. They need
now,
to
Helen, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap this up. We're limiting public testimony to 3 minutes.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I think that the reentry should be community-based. I think it should be Alaska Correctional Ministries. It should be Teen Challenge. It should be, we should be able to rally other organizations to take that over, and that might relieve some of the cost. And thank you very much for listening.
Thank you very much, Helen. Does anybody have any questions for Helen? So we are going to go to, I've got Janet McCabe on the line. Janet, however, before you begin your testimony, you're a part of the invited testimony for next week when we talk about the reentry aspect of things. Do you still want to testify today?
Well, I would like to give you a quick 2 minutes.
Go right ahead if you'd like to. Please identify yourself for the record then and tell us with whom you're affiliated.
Okay, and we're grateful to be able to testify next week on reentry. So, good afternoon, Chairman Ledoux, Vice Chair Keller, and members of the House Judiciary Committee. For the record, I'm Janet McCabe, speaking for the Board of Directors of Partners for Progress. Our board is in full support of House Bill 205. Adoption of this omnibus reform bill will make Alaska one of the leaders in change that has long been needed by the nation as well as by our state. This bill is the result of a phenomenal amount of research and study by the Pew Public Safety and Justice Reinvestment Group, who partnered with the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission. The Pew Group used a multivariate analysis, which is the highest standard of research. It simply means looking at a topic from different perspectives and studies to assure the accuracy of their findings. As a result, their recommendations are solidly based on excellent evidence that changes in the bill will have a positive outcome for public safety as well as for cost savings. Partners for Progress sees the primary benefits of this bill in 5 categories. First, for the state budget, by avoiding expenditure for the expanded prison capacity that is needed soon and inevitably unless these reforms are adopted. Secondly, for the overall public safety by reducing crime. Third, for victims by preventing additional victimization and facilitating payment of restitution. Fourth, for the welfare of the individuals, families, and children involved, we believe in redemption. And fifth, for the good of the whole community, that is Alaska. And thank you so much for this opportunity to testify.
Thanks very much, Janet. Does anybody have any questions for Janet? Well, thank you. And I'm not sure, did I note that you had entered the room, Representative Christ Tompkins? If I didn't, Representative Christ Tompkins has joined us.
Forgettable event.
So, we will now go to the audience in Juneau. And we have first here in the audience Tara Burns from Community United for Safety Protection. Tara, will you join us up front here?
Thank you. My name is Tara Burns. I'm with the Community United for Safety and Protection. And we are a group of current and former Alaskan sex workers, sex trafficking victims, and our allies working towards safety and protection for everyone in Alaska's sex industry. And we are strongly in support of House Bill 205. House Bill 205 is a timely fix to statutes that no longer serve Alaskans. House Bill 205 is an important step that has to be taken now in light of evidence-based research in combination with Alaska's reduced financial circumstances. We don't want Alaska to end up like California, with no money and the prison system in federal receivership. We support House Bill 205 also because there are members of our community who are serving really long prison sentences for, what are defined as crimes against public decency. And if House Bill 205 passed, it would allow those members of our community to be at home with their children and to not, have them lose their housing and become a burden on the state when they get out of prison. We would like to see language added to House Bill 205 to address the needs of victims and witnesses of crime by including language from Senate Bill 21. Senate Bill 21 clarifies that clarifies and updates the intent of the prostitution statute and expands public safety by including 16 violent crimes that victims or witnesses would be allowed to report without the threat of being charged with prostitution. And this is needed. I did research at UAF in my graduate degree in 2014. I consulted with 48 people who had worked recently in Alaska's sex trade. 74% of them said that they had been the victim or witness of a crime that they did not report because they were afraid of being charged with prostitution. Of the subgroup of people who did try to report crimes and who could also be defined federally as sex trafficking victims, 80% of them said that they were turned away by the police. 60% said that they were threatened with arrest, and 33% were actually arrested while they were trying to report that they had been the victim or witness of a crime. We urge your support for House Bill 205 and ask you to please include the language from Senate Bill 21. It is against our Alaskan values to allow criminals to target our most vulnerable community members with impunity. And in considering amending House Bill 205 with the language to protect victims from Senate Bill 205, we ask you to please include 5 additional crimes that people should be able to report without being charged. Extortion, coercion, and robbery are the crimes that are most frequently committed against sex workers and sex trafficking victims. And then while they are less common, we think it's also really important that people be able to report sexual assault of a minor or possession or distribution of child pornography without with confidence that they will not be charged with prostitution as a result of making that report. Reconfiguring the many statutes in House Bill 205 are a priority, and so must be protecting Alaska's most vulnerable with language from Senate Bill 21 in this 29th legislative session. Thank you so much for hearing my testimony, and I'm available for any questions.
Thanks, Tara. Anybody have any questions for Tara? Thanks for waiting around. And next we have Rick Lanolino. I hope I'm not butchering your name.
Fairly common. I'm Rick Lanolino. I'm retired, and I was the coordinator for the Juno Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder Diagnostic Clinic, and I'm a board member of Juno Alliance for Mental Health. I'm going to speak.
Are you testifying on their behalf?
I'm testifying on my own.
But thank you.
Just so you know my background, basically. Thank you for allowing me to speak to you. I know you've had a real long and arduous testimony. I can hear that from today. Clearly, when you have DePue and the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission doing, evidence-based research, that's solid stuff. I want to speak from my own experiences, primarily with clients. When I was with the clinic, a large number of our adult clients with FASD, fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, went in and out of prison, very, very low crimes, and they spent a lot of time going in and out and a lot of expense to the system as well. One of the things that really worked well with our clients was house arrest and electronic monitoring. That really worked. People who had businesses, people who were working could keep their jobs, and they kept the community safe. I know there's also students at UAS, because I take classes there as a senior, that are on monitor, and they have been successfully taking classes, and their monitor allows them to go to class and go to the housing, and that's it. And eventually they get off, and they are successful students with high grades. I also take a class in a prison right now. It's a UAS class that's half the students, half are inside students. The other thing that I wanted to mention was that treatment service and aftercare services, which relates to reentry, of course, are vital in this bill. The other thing that the whole country is dealing with is discretionary parole reforms, and that has to do with geriatric offenders who can go back safely to the community. They're very old. Some of them can barely walk. Very expensive medical bills, and they shouldn't be in an institutional setting with the kind of cost and budget issues that we're dealing with. Lastly, my clients, when they went into prison, they went to the school for scoundrels. They learned antisocial coping mechanisms. They came out with criminal friends who set them up to do many heists and stuff like that, and they were set up to do it because they didn't understand the consequences of their actions because of the brain damage they had with FASD. I think we want to keep these people out. I've always wanted to keep them out. I didn't think they were ever appropriate to go into prison, but we didn't have other places for them at that time, and we need to use some of these other issues, other mechanisms that the bill provides. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, and I really appreciate the time.
Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions?
Yeah.
Representative Len?
Yes, I forget who it was, but somebody said in testimony last night that at least one sex offender had been arrested by this testifier. I think it was Trina Sears or somebody, who arrested a sex offender who was wheeling around in a wheelchair, a geriatric type person. So, you know, it does happen, regardless of age.
Thank you, Representative Len. Does anybody have any questions? All right, thank you very much. So, looks like we've had two new additional people on the line over at the off-net. We've got Robin Langley, and we've got Nikki Hines. So, first of all, Robin Langley. Robin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you.
Can
you want
me
to proceed? Please identify yourself and tell us who you represent.
My name is Robin Langley. I'm the Executive Director for Victims for Justice, located in Anchorage. We are a nonprofit that assists victims of violent crimes.
Thank you. You can proceed.
Thank you. I wanted to address the committee today just to speak to my major concern with both this and SB 91. We've worked with Senator Coghill's office quite closely on some of these amendments that he produced and had some discussions around the bill. My main concern still is the reinvestment portion of either one of these bills. It's talked about that is the main component of this. Criminal justice reinvestment is putting that money back into the system. I just want to urge everyone to not get caught up in the fiscal crunch that our state is in right now and really consider, the fact that we do need to put the money back in. We need to put the money into mental health. We know that Department of Corrections is the biggest provider of mental health in the state right now. We need to provide more sex offender training. We need to provide more substance abuse programs. We know that heroin's on the rise. We know that alcohol has been a consistent problem for many years in the state. Without doing the reinvestment, this bill just isn't going to go anywhere. And my concern is that, we keep talking about it, but we haven't seen anything actually outlined in the bill. We haven't seen anything outlined in any fiscal notes yet. So that's where I am. I absolutely believe our criminal justice system is broken. It's broken for the people, the offenders. It's broken for the victims. And I want to see it change. I think everybody wants to see it change, but I want to see it changed in a responsible and respectful manner for all people, especially victims. Thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Did you have something, Representative Miller? Does anybody have any questions? Well, I'm just going to note that we are going to be talking about reinvestment. That's next week we're going to be doing that. And this bill is not going anyplace without that reinvestment component. We are all aware of how critical that is to the bill. So thank you very much for your insight, Robin. Appreciate your coming out.
Thank you.
And we have also Nikki Hines of the Fairbanks Reentry Coalition. Nikki, do you want to identify yourself and you can proceed?
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nikki Hines, and I am the Fairbanks Reentry Coalition Coordinator. As a person that gets to be face-to-face with the reentrants prior to the release through the halfway house, the great concern is the allowance of a license to earn that privilege back to have a driver's license. Speaking with them, they really see zero hope to get back into the community, provide a stable work environment, make it to probation, doctor's appointments, and just the normal things that we do throughout the day that require having a car. The public transportation in Fairbanks is really not conducive to someone who's trying to get back into the community, as well as the freezing temperatures makes it a little bit more difficult. Riding a bike really isn't an option for a few months out of the year. So I just fully support this part of the House bill, allowing for that reinstatement of the driver's license after that, after completion of whatever privileges or whatever is set forth for them to accomplish. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions for Nikki? Well, thank you, Nikki. Appreciate your coming out to testify.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So that looks like it for the various off-room sites. Believe that we have Mary Sattler signed up for testimony, and after you've testified, Mary, I'll ask anybody else in the room or online whether they want to testify.
Excuse me, what happened to that lady with the bad communication?
I couldn't hear him.
He wanted to know what happened to the lady with the bad communications, and she's apparently unavailable, but I will. Okay. All right, Mary.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chairman, and thank you, committee members. This is a very important piece of legislation that many Alaskans are watching quite closely. So my name is Mary Sattler, S-A-T-T-L-E-R, and I'm a lobbyist for one of my clients is the Alaska Regional Coalition. The Alaska Regional Coalition represents tribes from five regions, the Kuwerik region, and Tanana Chiefs regions, which have already testified, as well as Chugachmoot, Manilik, and Tlingit and Haida. I want to make sure that people know that the coalition is united behind the comments that have already been stated on behalf of the Native organizations, Kuwerik and Tanana Chiefs Council. Our organization does believe that criminals should be held accountable, but we're also very interested in making sure that people who have found their way into the criminal justice system can find their way back home. And we are very interested in making sure that we have healthy communities. It is not lost on us the impacts to victims. Many of the victims of these crimes are people in our own communities. Sometimes relatives and friends. But we also want to make sure that all Alaskans can be productive citizens and can seek the needed treatment that many need. So I just want to come forward and state the organization's support of this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Keller.
Well, thank you. Former legislator, we can't let her get out of here without a couple hard questions.
Okay.
No, I just want to throw off, for what it's worth, on the table. There'll be the Department of Corrections will be working on risk assessment tools, and I would just encourage your organization working with the Department of Corrections to make sure those risk assessment tools are appropriate for rural Alaska. Having spent some time there, I know that it's really highlighted when you have a situation where somebody has been in prison and comes back, the thought is, please be involved with the Department of Corrections so that the risk assessment tools are appropriate to your needs in rural Alaska.
Through the chair, thank you, Representative Keller, and we are looking forward to working with the Department of Corrections on the tools that they're going to be using.
Thank you. Any other questions? Mary, nice seeing you here. Thanks for coming out. So do we have anybody else in the audience who would like to testify? So do we have anybody else online, including, is Caitlin Walsh online? Just off record for a second. So, all right, seeing no further testimony, I'm not going to close public testimony now. So, Caden, if you can hear us, you will have another opportunity for this. I'm going to hold the bill over. Our next meeting is going to be Monday, March 28th, to discuss reinvestments. Again, any amendments are due to my office on Friday at noon, and we now stand...
Not this Friday.
Friday, April 1st. No comments about that. And we're going to stand adjourned, and it is 2:08